indicator here. I'm a physicist, and I would like to acknowledge the IQC for the hospitality here. Okay, so I'm a condensed matter theorist, so I like to make things very condensed. So, and I know you are all very tired, and I will just promise to give you only 10 slides, including this one. Okay. Let's see. Right. Mm-hmm. So, as a theorist, we like to unify for all of the theories. So, so the first thing I'd like to talk about is that we look at quantum mechanics and quantum computation in the same framework. Okay. Let's take a look at the ABC of the quantum mechanics. What I mean ABC means that the basic equation, which is equivalent to the Schrödinger equation, if I put this U to be this contains a Hamiltonian. Okay, so when we study quantum mechanics, we are typically given a initial state, and we are given a unit choice transformation, and usually the Hamiltonian is specified. And then our job is to calculate the final state. And this is the unknown we want to find. So an example of this is that, say, suppose I have a magnetic field pointing along the vertical direction, and this would be a spin pointing along the x direction. So the effect is that the spin will perform precession. So we calculate the probability of finding the spin along the components, etc. So how about quantum computation? So quantum computation typically is the initial state and the final state are specified. And then what your job is to find the unitary transformation which will perform this transformation. And typically, this kind of transformation is achieved by a series of discrete gates, and then which will be typically 1 cubic gate and 2 cubic gate. And so over the last, I think, more than 10 years, so lots of effort is trying to do along this direction. So given U, and then you find a product of, you count the number of gates you can construct, and then you calculate the complexities and et cetera. So, so as to my knowledge, I think that very few effort is made to go to this direction. Namely, if I give you a bunch of gates, and then can you find the Hamiltonian? Right, exactly. Exactly, exactly. One Hamiltonian, single Hamiltonian. So, here is the open question. So, do we really understand the power of a quantum computer? It seems to be a very big question. Okay, now my open question is something like this. Suppose I give you a exponentially many 1 qubit and 2 qubit operations and then multiply them together. And then take a log, and then I found H1. Let's say I can do that. Okay, suppose I have another algorithm, which is a product of n terms, and then I take a log, and then I find H2. The question is, what's the difference between H1 and H2? So I think this is, I think this problem is poorly understood. So I tried to talk to one of the experts in this field, Scott, and he said he has no idea. And so I believe this is an open question. Now, and attempts to study along this line of thought is not explicit, but implicitly or related by Sigloy in 2000. Okay, he wants to ask a question. What is the computational rate of a quantum computer? Okay, so he invoked the known results many like 20 years ago, I think, that So if you want to, I give you any initial state, pure state. If you want to rotate this pure state to an orthogonal state, then the minimal time it takes is roughly given by this relationship, where h bar is the Planck constant, and E is the initial energy of your system. And this result actually tells us that the minimal time for to rotate such a execution. But so a warning sign is that it does not tell you the minimal time to rotate to arbitrary state. It just tells you to go to an orthogonal state. So what Seyfried did is to plot this formula with E replaced by mc squared. So he just mentioned that if you have anything that has mass, then the fastest gauge you can execute is this, and then you just do your simple math to calculate per second how many operations you can do. And okay, so we actually had to think about this question more carefully, be more critical. So let's think about the quantum electrodynamics. So we have a zero point energy in our vacuum, which is infinity. So does it mean that our vacuum can perform arbitrarily fast gauge? I don't know the answer, but it is good to think about it. If this approach is the correct way to think about it. And a second consideration you have to think about it is that quantum computation is typically does not consume any energy. So is energy really the important quantity in quantum computation? We don't know. Well, so if you just consider your computational process as a big unitary transformation like this, so quantum computation is something like this, and then I can in general put this U to be this Hamiltonian. So if you include everything, it does not consume energy. Of course, in your lab, you consume a lot of energy, I know. And so, third question. So it's also my question. Can we speed up our computational process by using a single Hamiltonian evolution? So these are questions that are poorly understood, I guess. And I don't have the answer to these questions. So one method to study this probably is to consider some very simple process. I mean, this also may have practical uses. So this is called a quantum state transfer. So the question is this. Suppose I give you a 1D spin chain, and then I can I compare two methods of transferring my quantum state. So the first one is that I couple all of the terms, all of the spins, all together, and then I perform a single Hamiltonian evolution. Okay, I shall discuss how we can actually do this. Let's just say that we can do this with a single Hamiltonian. Namely, if I start and cook a spin here, and then you'll be transported to here. And then let's think about another approach, which is a more standard approach, where you have you perform a serial swap. So here, we first couple these two spin, and then this spin will be qubit transferred to here, and then here, and on and on and on. So this transformation will consist of products of swaps. Question is, which one is faster? So I don't have a PowerPoint, so I just put the answer right away. So the answer is almost the same. It's somewhat surprising.
So
if I am right, you are referring actually to the paper by some group. So, so maybe I briefly comment about that approach. So basically, they consider a coupled system which has an energy gap, delta E, let's say, and then they couple with a spin to this gapped system, linear chain, and then they calculate the information transfer speed. But actually, what they did is not quite right, because so the coupling in the chain is stronger than the coupling between the link. So the comparison is not fair, because so if you want to compare two approach, you have to tell me what is the maximum coupling you have. But what they did is that they did not compare the right couplings. Yeah, when I realized that paper, I'm not sure if I should write a comment about this. I know it's going to appear in PRL or something. Yeah. So the answer is almost the same. I also actually have say for example, MMR approach where they couple three spin all together, and I roughly estimated it is no speed up at all. I mean, it's almost a constant speed up if there is. So I actually justified this quite rigorously last year. Let me just briefly describe how a single Hamiltonian evolution is possible to transfer a spin from one end of the chain to another end. So we start with a Hamiltonian, which is fairly reasonable. So for each term, you say if you forget about all other terms, so for each term, it represents a swap. You can perform a swap, right? We just put these all swaps together into a single Hamiltonian, and add. So here, add to n. And the feature of this Hamiltonian is that the total spin, I think this is 2, and then plus all everything. And so because this conserves your total number of spin-up particles, and Hilbert space was originally 2 to the power n, is now shrink to n only, so it becomes tractable. And Hamiltonian would look like something like this. It's a tri-diagonal form. And then if you look at that clever enough, then you know that one possibility is to map this Hamiltonian into a spin precession problem. And this was done in 2004 by the Cambridge group. And I think, so this just gives you an idea. So you have a chain, and then you map this problem into a spin precession problem, and that's all. Now, what would like to comment? So this chain can also, if you bend it, or you don't necessarily to bend it, but you just adjust, draw it like this, it's still a one-dimensional chain. So suppose the all of the states are pointing down, then if you put a spin up here at the middle, so this has to be an odd number chain, then this spin will have two paths to go. So it's just like the optics you saw. And then what happens is that, so when this chain, so it is now effectively one-dimensional chain along this direction, then you will transport to here, and this is a entangled pair. And then you can perform a teleportation with this entangled pair. And so as you can see, this will roughly give you a factor of 2 speed up if you just bend the chain and then perform teleportation. So nothing, no speed up, but just a application that probably can be useful. Okay, so then we forget about the fundamental question. We just think about what other uses of this kind of chain can, potential applications. So it's actually in 1928, Jordan and Wigner tells us that whenever you have a 1D spin chain and have a nearest neighbor interaction, they actually can be mapped to a spinless, the problem of spinless fermion hopping. The idea is very simple. So if you have a spin initialized at this end and another spin initialized at this end, so this one wants to get here and this one wants to get here, And then the consequence is that they perform a swap operation, and for two fermions, you will have a minus sign. And then this one can be used as a controlled phase gate. And actually, if you consider many excitation, you can use this thing to perform universal quantum computation. So this is just one more application. So we also consider a single unitary transformation, single Hamiltonian evolution. The comment is that it is also a single Hamiltonian evolution. So to explore more, you can also perform a so-called switch, where if you have a spin here, be transferred to here, and if you change the local properties, so suppose the couplings are uniform, you do not change the coupling, and then if you just tune the local potentials, and then you can selectively choose where to go using this single Hamiltonian evolution. Yep, I think that's all. So the story is that I want to study the ultimate power of quantum computation, and then, but I can't, and then I developed some, I think, interesting devices. And, any questions?
Any questions? Oh, I had a few.
Okay.
So if I got your goal, right? So you want to find a Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
Expand it from there and actual definite unitary. Right? So you got, if I understand, well, you're not looking for a Hamiltonian that will implement a certain action. You need to implement the rotation on X, but you say, I have a unitary, and I want to implement it through a Hamiltonian. Then wouldn't that be enough just, unitaries is all product of SU2 and SU4, it's all a V group, so we can just take the log of N and bang, it's a Hamiltonian.
Yep.
Just apply it for a certain time, I guess.
Yep, you can do that.
So how's your thing, why going a different way?
So can you really take the log of a big matrix efficiently? And then, numerically you can take a big matrix with a log, right? The question is, what's the difference between these two Hamiltonian, right? Well, how do you characterize them? You can characterize the right-hand side by the complexity, namely the number of terms on the right-hand side. But if I take the log, how do I differentiate these two? Yeah, that's my goal, but I could not tell you anything about this. So I try to study something simple. I try to study where these terms are just swapped, and then I find how complex is this Hamiltonian. I find that it could be quite simple. Then it is also have a one chain and then be possible. But I don't know if you give me an algorithm which consists of exponentially many terms, can I still find it simple? Or if it is Hamiltonian, it's not simple, then how do I define and then how do I characterize it? So in some sense, I have been doing this part a lot. I'm missing this part because it's very difficult. Yes? Let's fix the same T. Or it's just a scaling, right? If you just have different T's, it's just a scaling. To compare these things, you can just fix the same T. Yep. But so Yeah, I know that you probably have to do some scaling to compare these two Hamiltonian, but so how do you characterize the difference between them? I mean, if you have an algorithm which contains exponentially many terms, and then you have another algorithm you contains n terms, you will say that this algorithm is more complex than another algorithm. But what if my quantum computer allows you to perform the same algorithm with a single Hamiltonian evolution? And what is the difference between these two? How do you characterize that? Actually, I'm not sure what you say, a question or something. Yeah, so I think we are all not quite sure how to characterize them. That's why this seems to be very confusing, because it is a question. Right. Yeah, you can do lots of scaling about a coupling constant, but what is the coupling constant? What would this Hamiltonian look like? Right? That's your question. Yeah, certainly you need to, so I mean, if this is meaningful, you have to make sure that it is in some sense irreducible. I mean, if you give, so let's say I give you a factoring algorithm, you won't expect that could be reduced to polynomial terms, right? So now, so as I said, what I attempt to do is to go from this direction to this direction. I mean, typically you do from this direction to this direction, right? Okay.